Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on a Wednesday. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Care, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, and the brand new 2015 Kia Sorento. Wrapped around Kevin Herr as he drives every day.
I've been enjoying the all-wheel drive vehicle. It gets in the 20s high, or in the 20s city, mid-20s city, up to 30 in highway mileage. Available in a four-cylinder and a V6 as well. And you can get a third-row seating for up to seven passengers total. What I noticed today was if you have, like, the seven-passenger version, in the five-passenger that I've been driving around, there's two accessory ports in the front, one in the back. I haven't even gotten into the very far back to see how many accessory ports are back there, but you can do a lot of charging of electronic devices, pads, tablets, phones, especially on those long rides to keep the kids entertained. Very much an important part of a vehicle nowadays when you're looking for something to haul the kids around in, and especially to go on trips. Kia Sorento, available in all-wheel drive and a 5-year, 60,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty, including 5-year, 60,000-mile roadside assistance. And for the month of November, not just 72 months, but 75 months at 0% APR with Kia Motor Finance. Talk to Kai and the folks at Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf for the details.
And, of course, our wonderful friends at Sunbury Motors, also at 4th Street in Sunbury. All right. Let's take a break.
I was just going to say, I was just going to add in, you know, when you were looking at cars years ago, and I mean, growing up, they had the cigarette lighter adapters, and everybody thought, oh, that was interesting. We can plug this in, and you know, you can go spot deer or whatever, or maybe even, you know, bring in a portable cassette deck or something. Now, one of the things you look at when you get in is, what are the accessory ports? They're not cigarette lighter adapters anymore. They're accessory ports. And how many of them are there in this vehicle? How can I charge my phone? It's interesting how things change.
That way you can call me.
Oh, no. I don't have to worry about that because that's the Bluetooth integration with Kia. I just hit a button and can call you from my steering wheel.
And go right to voicemail.
That's usually
what
happens.
We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you back with us. Harry Donahue, play-by-play voice at Temple later in the week. Dave Revson, BTN later in the week as well. Looking forward to that. Penn State basketball landed a top 30 class. First time they've done that in my years here, and I've been here, I think, for three or four.
Three or four?
I've never
done
that before.
Is it 30 years yet, or is it 20?
Me?
Yeah.
This will be my 33rd season.
Okay, I thought it was in the 30s for basketball anyway.
Yep, 33rd season. I have not trademarked anything I've said, unlike Bill Raftery. Raftery has trademarked with a kiss and onions.
Really? I didn't know that.
He's had them trademarked.
I've never used it, but I didn't know that.
Trademarked. You can't do it.
I think I told you I did steal Downey Goes the other day, but I did credit you for that. So
I really don't care.
I know, but it was so good. And it fit the situation really well. So I gave you credit. Now, you have two. Downey Goes and on a three-pointer. Good. I just like the way you do that. I mean, it's you know, those are the two things. Those are the two trademarks. Well, the two things that I associate with you, not trademark, but associate with you.
I don't even think about what.
No, I know. I know. But those come automatically.
Yeah, I don't. What I say. Never really thought of it as a signature or whatever, but I do have people that will come up and they'll impersonate Touchdown Penn State.
That's another one, yep.
They will impersonate It's Good or Good. I get that a lot. I was actually coaching a Babe Ruth All-Star game once. This guy, and all I was doing, and we were doing fielding before the game started. So, and I was just positioning fielders, saying, hey, guys, we need to, you know, move over here, move over there. And the guy comes up and he says, hey, I know that voice. I said, yeah, okay. Yeah, it was out, I don't know where it was, Punxsutawney, Dubois, someplace. And I said, oh, well, nice to meet you. He says, yeah. He says, my first base coach does the best you.
Bring him over.
No, I didn't say that. And he brought him over. And oh my God, hey, you're better than I am.
You nailed it. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's really, really special. Yeah. We have an opportunity to bond as a group on Black Friday.
Oh, you're obsessed with this.
Throwing a wrench into.
I was not invited.
We'll get Buter on the phone.
Which is fine. I don't mind.
Well, you don't want to bond with us? We're not good enough for you to break bread with? So we're not good enough to break bread with you.
I don't know. That's a question for you and for Buter.
No, I'm inviting you, but you're saying that we're not good enough for you.
I don't believe I've ever said that.
Well, you're obviously blowing us off.
Plus, you haven't even said where you're going yet. Maybe you're going somewhere I don't want to go.
Well, do you want me to publicly state where we're going, and then you can publicly state I'm not eating there?
At least I'd have a reason, you know.
Maybe that would come off brilliantly with the advertisers.
Maybe I have an allergy, or the one thing that you're... I don't know. I can't think of one, but... I got a message and said...
I mean, I've been around you enough. I don't think you're allergic to any food.
We just got a message that said... do I have any signature calls? I said, no.
Would ask you if you do.
Yeah, I don't have one.
Yeah, you do.
No, I don't.
Touchdown, Chicago. We now move to further action 3 quarters later.
In the fourth quarter.
So. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Never before in the annals of Kia history have we been able to offer you 0%
APR for up to 75 months, that is. Yes, 0% APR financing is available for the month of November on all 2014, 2015 Optima and Optima hybrids. And they start at $21,550 with payments of $288 per month.
But we're just getting started.
We also have 0% APR for up to 75 months on the 2015 Sereno, starting at $24,163 with payments of $322 per month. And there's more, like 0% APR for up to 60 months on 2014 Forte Coupes. And all new Kias are marked down to sell and all come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. So hurry in to Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf
or at sunburymotors.com
and see how much vehicle 0% buys you.
Tax and tax extra. Special financing through Kia Motor Finance to well-qualified buyers. See dealer for details.
John Unitas Jr. joining us about his book next half hour. So you're going to go out hunting on Black Friday?
No! I'm not hunting on Black Friday. You can't do that. Now, don't start that rumor.
Yeah, but you've always said that there are far more deer out there on Black Friday than on Monday.
It won't matter what day I go out. I won't see any anyway.
I mean, last year you went to the zoo. It said something about lack of movement.
I still didn't see the deer.
Oh, God.
Listen, I am the most unsuccessful hunter anyone has ever known. I've learned to accept
actually,
it.
Actually, my father was.
I could give him a run for his money.
I don't know. My dad, they have this slice of property up in Warren Center. He had it with his brothers. And so every year he would go out there, and I'm going to go hunting for the weekend. And every weekend, every time he came back with nothing. I always had the feeling that he never really wanted to pull the trigger. I always had that feeling. Because he always loved the outdoors. He loved the woods. He'd take the dog for a walk every Sunday out in the woods. And I always had a feeling when it came to the, hey, let's bring home food part. Look, the store's open. So we'll get something there.
My father used to have a saying when we'd go hunting. He said, want to go take the guns for a walk? Because that's what happened.
Yeah.
There was one year that in Pennsylvania, if your license ended in a 0 or a 5, you had to fill out, they asked you to fill out a survey. Because they were trying to find out, you know, what people were hunting for to make sure that they were doing everything right. And I'm thinking, oh, this is great. Mine ended in a 0. I'm going to get a survey. This is going to be cool. How many times did you go out? Oh, it must have been about 20, 25. What did you hunt? Oh, small game, birds, deer. What did you get? One squirrel. I could see the people in Harrisburg looking down at the game commission going, put this guy in for take him out of the survey because that's not going to count. One squirrel. They give you like 6 lines to write down what you got. One squirrel. I'm just glad they didn't ask the question, what did you see? Because the answer would have been, one squirrel.
One squirrel. Oh, no. Yeah. Okay. Temple, of course, coming up, and we'll have Harry Donahue on later in the week, and also Dave Refson from BTN on later in the week. John Unitas Jr., Johnny, you and me, the man behind the golden arm, he will join us at 4:35. Kevin will also ask him about changes he should make to his fantasy team. We've found out that Kevin is now using guests in order to gain an advantage in fantasy football.
Wait, you think he'd be able to help?
The bottom line is this. It's unethical.
What's your point? You're assuming I had ethics in the first place.
I understand that, but
it's all about winning, man. It's not about ethics.
Thank you, Jimbo. Appreciate that.
Exactly. He sets the perfect example. I don't know why we're down to number 3. Who cares? You're still available to go to the big game.
You still got enough pad. You're not even 4 yet.
Oh, we're going to lose that cushion if we lose a game. No, if you lose a game, you wouldn't be in the top 4 anyway, even if you were number 1.
Right. And the only one that I look at is TCU, and I see Baylor with the same record. If they have the same record, Baylor beat TCU. And I don't want to care about, well, they have this many top 25 wins. Dude, they played, okay? They've already proven to me they're better. Okay, we're done.
What I wonder is...
I love head-to-head thing. You can't just look at head-to-head. Yes, you can! They played! I want to know, most of these things that are set up, in theory, you're ranked here because, in theory, I think you're better than the other guy. Okay, they played. They already proved that they can score more points than the other team can.
No theory needed.
Okay? It's called practical application.
You can't just look at that. I still want to see it go to 8. I think 8 is the limit for me.
I think you have 8. You already have 8. fact, if they would have changed the rules and allowed the Big 12 to have a championship game, you'd have 10.
I know what you're talking about. I don't look at it. Yeah. I'm not looking at it that way, but I understand what you're talking about.
Every conference has a championship game except the Big 12.
I understand what you're talking about. I'm not disagreeing with you. I would rather see 8 teams selected for the championship tournament.
I wouldn't.
I think 4 is too many.
It is.
I think 4 is not. I think 4 rather is not enough. I think 8 is fine, and I don't see it. I don't want any more than 8.
And if you're sitting there right now with 8, everybody's arguing about, well, what about 9, 10, 11?
I know. It opens the door. I get it. I'm with you.
I think you already have that layer. It's called the conference championship games. You play the conference championship games. You move on.
Is there any... That's you mentioned all? It a few minutes ago, I think, or a few seconds ago. Who doesn't play a conference championship game?
Big 12.
That's the only one of the major divisions.
Yeah, the reason is they don't have 12 teams. They're not allowed to. You have to have a minimum of 12 to have a conference championship game under NCAA rules.
Okay.
They should change the rule.
I'm going to say something crazy. Why don't you drop that rule and let them have one?
That's what I've been saying for weeks.
Okay. I thought it sounded familiar.
You know what I love about the listeners of this show?
They listen.
John Unitas Jr., next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Wednesday. I'm in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motor Ski, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined by John Unitas Jr., who wrote the outstanding book, Johnny, You, and Me. John, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show. Hi, John.
Steve?
It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, you know, it's a major endeavor in order to write a book. Now, obviously, the motivation is your father to do this. But what, in the end, did it take for you to write this? And was it more laborious than even you realized it would be?
Well, it certainly was a team effort, that's for sure, Steve. And it took 3.5 years of my life to put it together. And I did it to honor and respect both my parents, my mother Dorothy, and my father, Johnny Unitas. So. It was very cathartic for me. I probably still need help, but that's another story in itself. but other than that, I enjoyed writing it, and I had a lot of fun interviewing. We've interviewed over 100 people, some close family friends, some just acquaintances, some people that just had stories about my dad. So it's kind of a compilation of all that, and I didn't want to make it just a football book either. I just wanted to share some of the things that I went through growing up in the 60s. It was a carefree time of living. You know, we didn't have the social media back then. You were able to ride your skateboard to the 7-Eleven, and your parents wouldn't know you were missing. And so it was just a different time, and I thought a lot of people respect my father. A lot of people put him on a pedestal where he belongs. Certainly I would put him there. He is the greatest quarterback of all time, and he was a great father. He didn't have a halo over his head, nor do I don't know anybody who does, but I just thought it would be pretty neat and cool and for other people to kind of see another side of my dad that they probably didn't know about.
John, what did it mean to you that Raymond Berry wrote the foreword?
Well, Raymond is such a dear, close friend of the family. He serves on my advisory committee with the Johnny Unitas Goldmarm Educational Foundation as a board member. And Raymond and Sally and his family are just, he's kind of like my second mom and dad. They are both. So I see him a lot. I talk to him a lot. We share... You know, just feelings about the way football was back then, and I was a ball boy for the Colts, so I saw it all firsthand. I was in the dorm room with my father. I was on the top bunk, Dad was on the bottom, and then Jimmy Orr and Raymond Berry, and the next dorm's over. So, I grew up with all those guys, and they're just just really down to earth people, very humble, and they love to play football, and they love to get back to the community, and they never turn anybody down for an autograph, and it just was a different time, Steve. So it means a lot to me.
Yeah, you mentioned never turned anybody down for an autograph. I mean, you the Unitas has lived in Baltimore. You are a part of the fabric of it, whether it's Towson, Baltimore, whatever. You didn't take off and go someplace else. As you went around with your dad and you saw people react to him, how did that impress you as an impressionable youngster?
Well, as a young man, I mean, obviously my dad wasn't my dad. You know, I didn't really think of him as this famous football player that he became. He worked hard at his craft. It was fun. I mean, I managed him later in his life and went to card shows and appearances and things of that nature, and it was just a joy. He was my best friend. And so we shared a lot. My father was very much of an introvert, but he just loved to be around the people. He recognized that if it wasn't for them, he wouldn't be as successful, nor would his team and his teammates be successful as they were. And you're right. I mean, they lived in this town. Unlike a lot of professional, you know, athletes today, they don't live where they play. It just was one of those things that my father just loved the city and loved the town and raised his children here and the second family here. And it was just, I don't think you see that anymore, Steve. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you do. I don't. But it's just one of those things that was important to the city. It's kind of grounded everybody here.
Yeah, you know, because I work with Jack Ham on the Penn State Radio Network. He still lives in the Pittsburgh area, as does Lynn Swan and a couple of other guys. But we've always felt that was rare. Your father was somewhat a man of great conviction. What convictions as a youth drove you crazy, and what ones are embedded in you today?
That's a very good question. Never gave that much thought. I think my father and mom raised us to be good people with strong character, integrity, and values, and things that I kind of passed on to my two children as well. And he was a common man for the common people, Steve, and that's kind of how I view it. And you're right. I think the Lynn Swans and Jack Hams, and they stay there because they recognize the importance of being in the town that people supported them. And same goes here. I live here in Baltimore. I haven't moved. I went to college in California, but I'm here in Baltimore. I have my businesses here. Right. So I'm committed to this town as well.
All right. So now, as you're a ball boy, you're around this, so you're used to it. So you're used to seeing Raymond Berry. You're used to seeing Lenny Moore, Jimmy Orr, you know, all the way through. What was it
Artie
like
Donovan,
for
yeah.
you to be down there around this as the Colts had one seeming success after another?
Oh, it was just absolutely fantastic. I mean, they treated me like just a kid, you know, growing up, and they'd play tricks on me. You know, we'd play tricks on them. I was in charge of, you know, with Peter Sidon, who I refer to in my book as well. He was my mentor. Peter's a practicing lawyer up in New York, but Peter was my mentor, and he helped take me around, and we picked up jock straps and sweaty clothes twice a day, put them in the hamper. We replaced their laces in their shoes, fixed their chin straps and the suspension helmets and all that good stuff. It was fun, man. It really was. And then when they were studying, you know, us boys, we'd be out in the middle of the field at Western Maryland College, now called McDaniel College, and we'd be playing football. And they'd come out and they'd comment, you can't throw, Unitas, you're just like your father, and blah, blah, blah. You know, so it was all a good time, man. It really was. It's just, as I say, they're all common guys, man. They smoked cigarettes and drink beer and went out carousing. But you know what? On Sunday and on practice, they came out and they performed. They played. They loved the game. They're the toughest guys in the world back then.
Your dad called his own plays. Unlike today's quarterbacks, he called his own plays. Discuss your dad's football intellect. How much he had to put into that part of it so that he could, at times, masterfully call the game?
Well, as a young man, and my sister was around, Janice, mother brother's a little too young, but every night my father would be down in the basement with his projector, and watching the game, watching, say, like Detroit and Green Bay. They were going to play Detroit the coming week, so he'd be watching what they were doing. And the projector, Steve, only had a forward and a reverse. Couldn't stop it. It's forward and reverse. And in front of him was his playbook and a scratch pad of paper where he'd jot the plays down. He'd write down the tendencies. he was a student of the game. He loved the game. He loved practice. He could practice all day long, wouldn't complain a single bit. But my sister and Janice and I were down in the basement. We'd hop on his lap, and he, you know, okay, forward, okay, reverse. And that lasted probably about 2 seconds, and we got up and said, this is boring, we're out of here, you know. But he stayed down there Tuesday through Thursday, and right after dinner, and he was down there for hours, 2-3 hours. And if he, you know, he didn't slight any of us children. We'd come down if he wanted to say something, or we'd come down, he'd spend the time with us, stop for a second, and go back to his studying film. And you know, one of the things my father always said as we grew older was, you know, listen, if you're going to play football, then learn the game of football. Okay, learn the defenses. Learn what a tackle does on a rollout. Learn what a guard does when he pulls. Learn what the defensive guy does. And as a quarterback, if you know those things, you have no problem in calling your own plays. But the problem today, and goes back to prep ball, is these kids aren't taught those fundamentals. They're not taught how to read a defense or what a guard does. Or you know, when I played football, I was a guard. I was a pulling guard. That's what I played, first of all. So I learned all those things when I was participating. And that problem today is, again, they don't learn those things. So therefore, their prep ball, their plays are being called for them. They go to high school, plays are being called for them. They get to college, the same thing. And they get the pros, the same thing. You tell me, maybe Brady calls his own plays, maybe Peyton. You know, some of those guys probably do, because they're students of the game. You see Peyton, when he comes off, right, he sits on the bench and studies. The other guys, they're just sitting out there. My father gets in the huddle and says, okay, Raymond, what do I got down there, 10 yards? Okay, and Lenny, what can you do on this? You know, and they talk back and forth. They didn't listen to those guys up in the press box. That's how they won. Right. That's how successful they were. You don't see that anymore.
No, you do not see that anymore. Your dad, of course, great success, always performed well in the big games. And in 1967, if I recall this correctly, and you can correct me, obviously, John, I believe your dad was the MVP in 67. And I remember they tied the Rams at 11-1-2, and the Rams, through a tiebreaker, got to the playoffs.
That's correct.
How frustrating was 1968 when your dad couldn't throw the football and Earl Morrill had to take over?
Well, Dad was injured, as you know. And then, of course, he healed up through the rest of the year. And then Super Bowl three came, or yeah, three, the Jets, say 69, I believe it was, Steve.
Yeah.
He's on the sidelines. He's ready. I mean, he can play. But Earl had a great season that year. So Shula, not a fan of my dad's, said to my dad, at, you know, before halftime, he says, John, get ready. We'll put you in at halftime. Well, my father, no problem, Shula. You know, I'll be ready. So halftime goes by, comes back out, and my father's getting ready. He says, John, we're going to give Earl another try. I said, no problem. You know, he didn't argue with the coaches. And so, needless to say, the rest of the game's history. I mean, they put my father in maybe a little bit more than 2 minutes left in the game, and he comes in and scores a touchdown. Now, over the years, as my father retired, we're doing card shows and appearances, you know, I'd run into, you know, Don Maynard, I'd run into Johnny Sample and all those guys. And they were scared to death they were going to put my father in earlier. Had they done it, they probably would have won. It would have been a different story, AFC, NFC. It would have been totally different.
Right.
But it is what it is.
Right. Why was it Shula's youth that was a problem as to how he handled the Colts when he took over?
Well, my father doesn't like screamers or hollerers. And my father just, there's no reason for that. And that's what Shula was. It could have been some conflict of some sort there. I mean, Shula was a defensive guy. My father was an offensive guy. And you're telling Shula to call, tell my father what to call, and then that's not going to work. You know, so it just didn't work. I mean, and you know, listen, it's not that my father hated Shula. He just didn't think much of him as a coach. That's all. Even though Shula was successful, you know. So, but again, my father loved Weeb. My father loved Don McCafferty. Shula just wasn't his cup of tea. And Shula was just, that's all he did was scream and holler.
Right. And, of course, you know, they win the greatest game ever played. I mean, the game that has launched the NFL on the road to where it is now, a popularity. Was your dad a guy ever to reflect? And if so, how did he reflect on that day in Yankee Stadium?
Well, I was born in 1956. I'm 58 years old. I wasn't around, you know, to see the game or anything. But over the years, my dad and I talked about it. And my father was one that always looked forward, Steve. Never look behind.
Yeah.
You know, he reflected on it. Yeah, it was great game. Blah, blah, blah. Let's move forward. You know, he always wanted to win, and he played hard to win. And so did his teammates, and he expected the same out of them as they would expect out of him. So, it was just another game to Dad, honestly.
Interesting.
He'll tell you that. Yeah, it really was. And you know, again, it was his start. He was injured a little bit, but you know, those guys, they hit you for 5 yards and keep hitting you for 20 yards down the field. That's not like today. So Dad passed the ball a lot back then. You know, so it's just a different, and you can't compare either. Compare, you know, Drew Brees and my father and the record at 47. You just can't do it. It's just totally different.
No, you can't do it. Plus, it was a 14-game season back then, and even before that, it was 12. Did your father over time, and you mentioned how the two of you were best friends, did your father over time mellow?
In what way?
Just in terms of...
He was never a rah-rah type of guy. He never did the high fives. He never danced. He threw a touchdown pass, walked off the field. That was it. There was never... And my father's emotional about two things. Animals and children, period. That's it. Didn't get totally excited about the game. It's just, you know, I'm going out there. Somebody asks him, he says, John, what do you do to get up before the game? He says, well, I wake up in the morning and I put my pants on and I go to work. That's it. What do you need to get up for a game for? You know, this is my job.
And your grandchildren and animals.
Children and animals, he was very sensitive about. Anything that had to do with an animal was hurt or something, my father was just right there. Children, the same thing. There's no this domestic abuse thing right now. That never was in my father's cards ever.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
It just wasn't. It just wasn't there. You know. And he did. You know, my father wouldn't have been a good coach either because he didn't like all that high five and crap and all that stuff.
Right.
It just wasn't his temperature at all.
Discuss his important work with children's hospitals, by the way.
Well, Dad was always one and has always been one to give back. I remember as a child, probably not as a child, but, you know, in like 10, 11, something like that, there's a school or actually a hospital here called Kernan's Children's Hospital. It's now part of MedStar Health. Kernan's Hospital was dealing with crippled children. My father was always there, always helping them out, doing things. And I remember as a child, which really stuck to me, and still this day it stucks to me, there was a young man who did not have any legs and nothing below his waist. It was a waist on top of a skateboard, kind of, and that's how the young man got around. And I never forgot that in my entire life. The guy, and he was positive about life. He moved forward through life. And my father just embraced this young man, and he did with, you know, March of Dimes and crippled children all over. You know, just Shriners Hospital, him and Raymond were working with us. So it was important for my father to give back, and he always did. He always took the time out. If this young man was dying of cancer, he'd bring him a Colts jersey, he'd bring him a uniform. Many stories we heard about that. So, and I got involved with my dad along those lines as well, and it's important for me to give back. That's why I continue his legacy through the Johnny Unitas Gold Arm Educational Foundation. You know, we obviously the platform is giving away the Golden Arm Award to the graduating senior college quarterback, and we have a great group of quarterbacks. None of them gotten in trouble, unlike the Heisman folks, and nobody's ever given the award back. But what we do is we provide scholarships to graduating high school scholar athletes moving on to college to play football, but more importantly to get their education. So it's a kind of a two-part component, which Dad started back in 1987. So I'm very proud to continue that legacy of my dad and give him back, and I know my children are prepared to do that as well.
The book is entitled Johnny, You, and Me, The Man Behind the Golden Arm from Triumph Books. John Unitas, Jr., it was a privilege to have you on the show. I really appreciated the talk.
Steve, thank you very much. And those out there in the audience, you can find the book on Amazon.com or Triumph.com or even my website, JohnnyUnitas.com, under collectibles as well.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for the time. John Unitas Jr. We'll WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Our thanks to John Unitas Jr. What a wonderful book about his father, the great Johnny Unitas. Coming up, we'll have Harry Donahue, the play-by-play voice of Temple football, And also Dave Revson from BTN coming up later this week. Also, because of the interview with John Unitas Jr., random thoughts with Kevin Herr postponed.
Oh, well.
I was looking forward to it.
I know. It broke your heart. I understand.
I only want players whose jerseys I buy to stay with the team the entire time. It's an odd, odd philosophy.
No, the only players that I like.
And on top of that, I only want my teams to play in their conference, and that's it, not the other conference.
You have a big issue with that, don't you?
Also,
I like what I like. Why do I have to come up with a reason for it? Does there have to be a reason? No.
Yes. And he also won't go to dinner with compadres when there's a bonding moment at hand.
Unless they're buying.
Well,
compadres, I mean, you guys on the show bust on me as it is. What's it going to be like if we're not on the show and at our table together? It'll be relentless.
So, in other words, you like to deny other people their fun?
Yes. Coming from the fun sucker. That coming from you. Come on.
What?
I don't want to talk about the. I don't want to talk about the rankings.
That's why you have the rankings. That's why I did talk about the rankings. I talked about the rankings today.
If you didn't have rankings that are pointless, what fun would it be?
I did talk about the rankings today.
Not if I wouldn't have brought it up, you wouldn't have.
Yeah, it was on my list of things to talk about.
I don't believe you.
I just don't want to talk about the bowl thing yet because they're not bowl eligible yet. So why should I speculate they're going anywhere?